We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Patriotism and a rush to serve in the military characterized America when the U.S. entered World War I in 1917. Those who didn't enlist in hopes of fighting in Europe or tried to avoid the military draft were called slackers. At the time, baseball was by far the American pastime. Dozens of Major League Baseball players like Ty Cobb and Christy Mathewson did enlist. But some of the biggest names in the sport, like Babe Ruth and Shoeless Joe Jackson, played in baseball leagues formed by Bethlehem steel plants or shipyards. There were teams in Lebanon and Steelton here in central Pennsylvania. And most of the best players joined teams in Pennsylvania and Delaware. A new book called Work, Fight, or Play Ball, How Bethlehem Steel Helped Baseball Stars Avoid World War I, chronicles the industrial and shipyard leagues. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author William Eckenbarger is with us today. Bill Eckenbarger, welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Scott. Thank you.
All right. So in the early part of the 20th century, when you hear about the history of baseball, you often hear about Major League ball players barnstorming, playing amateurs or semi-pro. But the Bethlehem Steel League and the shipyard leagues, you don't quite hear as much about that. Why is that?
I don't know. I was surprised to learn that Babe Ruth played in Lebanon, and that got me started. And it's not a widely known story.
It really isn't. And I mean, these leagues played over what, two or three seasons?
Two seasons.
1917, 1918?
Yes.
Okay. So why did you write this book?
I'm a baseball fan. I always have been a baseball fan, and I always wanted to write a book about baseball. And I had a real fun time doing it. It took me about a year and a half or so, but it was actually fun to do.
We were talking before the program today. You've written a number of books, including the Kids for Cash book in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Yes.
That book wasn't so fun to write, so this is kind of the complete opposite of that, huh?
Exactly. That book was very, very heavy and very, very disturbing to write.
Yeah.
And it actually affected me for a long time.
Yeah, just so everyone knows, to provide some context, what was that case about?
Well, there were two judges who were sending kids away to a privately owned juvenile detention center and getting over $2 million in kickback from the center, and the kids hadn't done things that would cause them to be incarcerated. It was like for shoplifting and disrespecting a teacher. They got essentially sent to jail for that.
Yeah, so you can see where this would be much more fun and much more pleasant to write than something about that. So describe America as it went to war in 1917.
Well, there were German spies everywhere. You were required. The big thing was to do your bit. And everyone was expected to participate in the war effort. And those who didn't do that were called slackers. And so horrible was the term that if a criminal defendant was called a slacker, it was grounds for overturning, for a new trial, because the term was so offensive that it would prejudice the jury.
How is this different than, say, a draft dodger in Vietnam?
Well, I think the Vietnam War was much more controversial. There was not the widespread public support there was for World War One.
So that was the key, that the country was so far so much in support of the war, and which is kind of ironic because they wanted to stay out of the war until we actually went to war.
Right, exactly. The war started in 1914, and we didn't get it until 1917. It really didn't start sending troops over there until 1918.
Mm-hmm. So there were several industries or occupations that were considered essential in America at the time. Baseball was one of them.
No, baseball was not one of them.
But there were some people. I mean, officially it wasn't considered essential, but in the eyes of many, it was considered essential.
Especially the baseball owners.
Oh, yeah. Well, Woodrow Wilson thought that baseball should continue.
Yes, he thought so. But there was something issued called the Work or Fight Order. It was issued by the War Department. It was what we call the Pentagon back then. And it essentially said that either you have to work in a central industry or be drafted in the armed force. It affected any young men between 18 and 32. And So the essential industries were farming, that was one, munitions plants, and steel mills and shipyards. So that was one way to get out of the draft, was to work in one of those industries.
But why did the baseball season continue?
Well, they shortened the season, and they allowed the teams to play out, and they actually had the World Series in September, which was unusual.
Mm. Major League Baseball teams at the start of the war tried to show their support for the war effort. And I have to say that after reading some of the things you describe in the book, it was almost comical in some ways.
It was absurd. They had teams would come out on the field, and they would shoulder their bats like they were rifles, and they would march to a army officer would march them, and they'd march out to the flag and salute the flag and then march back. It was almost comically absurd.
But teams were drilled, right?
Drilled, yes. It was very, very serious stuff. The Major League Baseball wanted to show that it was doing its bit, and that was one way they did it. And they were hoping to get baseball declared as an essential industry. But of course, they failed.
Mm. Somehow, I can't picture Bryce Harper putting his bat on his shoulder like a rifle and marching.
That is hard to picture, yes.
So how did the Bethlehem Steel League form?
Well, Charles Schwab, who is not the Charles Schwab we know.
I have to say that when I first read the name in the book, that's the first thing I thought of was Charles Schwab, the financial guru.
Completely different guy, but at the time as famous as the Charles Schwab we know. He formed a league of six teams. They were in three Pennsylvania steel mills: Bethlehem, Steelton, Lebanon, and then a steel mill near Baltimore, and a shipyard in Wilmington, Delaware, and a shipyard near Boston. And those are six teams. And they originally the original players were guys who worked at those plants. But in 1918, some of the major leaguers figured out that if they could get on one of those teams, they would be in an essential industry, and they would be exempt from the draft. And so there began a slight exodus. But then in May, Shoeless Joe Jackson he was deferred from the draft. He had a dependent wife. He had his mother was dependent on him. He had two sisters who were dependent on him, and three of his brothers were already in the military. But somehow his draft board rescinded his exemption, and he became 1A. And that's when he fled to the shipyard in Wilmington. And so after that, the major leaguers said, well, if he can get drafted, anybody can get drafted. So that really pushed the exodus to these teams.
Yeah, for those who aren't baseball fans or don't know the history, Shoeless Joe Jackson was one of the greatest players, greatest hitters in the game at the time. How did he get up to 1A with all those exemptions he could have used.
Well, he must have done something to anger his draft board, because at the time, local draft boards had complete power. They didn't have to reason, they didn't have to explain anything, and the only thing his biographers can think of is that he did something to anger one of the members of the draft board.
Yeah, Shoeless Joe Jackson was illiterate.
Yes.
I mean, would he just make an X?
He was completely... He was a really good hitter, but that was it. He had no other smarts.
Now, what team did he play for?
He played for the Harlan Shipyard in Wilmington, Delaware.
Now, that was in the Shipyard League.
Yes.
Did he play in the
Bethlehem? No, they had Harlan had teams in both leagues.
Okay, that's right. Okay, yeah. In Bethlehem Steel. So how often was Shoeless Joe Jackson playing?
He played once a week. He played mainly in the Bethlehem Steel League. And he played once a week, and then on weekends, on Sundays, he was off, and he would do things to raise money for the war effort. Mm.
Yeah, Shoeless Joe Jackson actually did some work, right?
He actually worked at the shipyard, yes.
Not all players did that.
Babe Ruth sure didn't, no.
Now, what did Babe Ruth do?
Babe Ruth had job title was Blueprint Messenger. And no one quite knew what that meant, but I've talked to people who remember him at the steel mill, and they said that he showed up in very expensive clothes, hang around for a couple hours, talked about baseball, and then walked out, and that was it. That was his work day.
Now, which Bethlehem Steel team was he on?
Lebanon.
He was on the Lebanon team.
Yes.
So where was the field in Lebanon?
It was on, Green Street and
Third
and Green.
Yeah.
It was at the mill.
I was going to say right where the mill is.
It's not there anymore.
But Babe Ruth played for the Lebanon team.
Yes.
How often did he play for the Lebanon
team?
He
actually played one game. And he struck out twice, and he was intentionally walked, and he played first base. At that time, remember, Babe Ruth was mainly a pitcher with the Boston Red Sox. He had not gotten to the Yankees or Yankee Stadium or the House of Ruth. That was all in the future.
Yeah, he was still playing for the Red Sox at the time that he was with the Lebanon team in the Bethlehem Steel League. But the thing, as you write in the book, many of the soldiers who were overseas were still interested in...
Yes.
It looks like they didn't see them as slackers. They were still interested in baseball. And this is when Babe Ruth started hitting home runs. Yes. So they were very interested in what Ruth was doing.
Well, what happened was the Red Sox started to lose players to the draft. So the manager needed some more outfielders. So Ruth, the pitcher, they knew he could hit pretty well. So they made him play the outfield, and that was the transition. In fact, he led the league that year in home runs with 11 home runs, which is more than many teams hit.
We were just talking about Babe Ruth. You said that he led the league with 11 home runs, but he actually hit more than 11, right?
He actually hit 13 home runs, but they had an unusual rule that I was totally blown away to learn, that if the game went into extra innings and there was a person on first base and the batter hit a home run, once that person on first base crossed home plate, the game was over. So the batter did not get credit for a home run. He got credit for a triple.
Yeah, just think how many times how many home runs Barry Bonds or Babe Ruth or Hank Aaron would have, how fewer home runs they would have if that rule was still in effect. All right, so the players that did work in the plants, okay, maybe worked is not the right word. Some did, you said, Shoeless Joe Jackson, but many others didn't. Were they considered slackers?
Well, it's kind of interesting. They did have a rebellion at one of the shipyards. The real workers thought that the players were getting privileges, but the games were always well attended. They averaged between 3,000 and 5,000 people at a game, which is phenomenal. They drew more people than some major league teams. And one game in Bethlehem, they had 18,000 people at.
So the fans, although they may call them slackers, they still thought so much they wanted to see baseball. I mean, I guess it was a way for many people back home to be entertained.
Yes. Yeah. You have to remember that if you wanted to know what happened in a game, you either had to go to the game or you had to read about it the next day in the newspaper because there was no radio, no TV. So a very small percentage of fans actually went to the game. So the newspapers carried batter by batter summaries of the games, long, long stories about the baseball games.
Mm. You didn't start at the Philadelphia Inquirer when they were still doing that, did you?
No,
that's no comment on your age or anything.
No.
And when you were at the Inquirer, you didn't write about sports.
I was not a sports writer. No, indeed.
That's where you won a Pulitzer Prize for your coverage of the Three Mile Island accident. So there were some players who were drafted or enlisted and fought, right?
Yes. The greatest player of the day was Ty Cobb of the Detroit Tigers, and he was exempt because he had two kids, but he enlisted, and not only did he enlist, but he went into the Army Chemical Warfare Division, which was considered the most dangerous duty in the Army. It was defending the troops against poisonous gas attacks, and they had some really dangerous situations over there.
Describe what that unit actually did, because I mean, when I read that, I was, oh my, they were like risking lives.
Yeah,
that training,
their lives were risked every day. Christy Mathewson was in that unit, and he was gassed. He was actually gassed, and it ended his career.
And Christy Mathewson from Central Pennsylvania outside of Lewisburg.
That's right, that's right.
The football stadium at Bucknell University, named for Christy Mathewson. When he retired, and what still is, third on the all-time list in wins. Pitcher he is tied with, Grover Cleveland Alexander. Now, I have to admit, when I was a kid, I saw a movie starring Ronald Reagan and Doris Day. If I remember correctly, it was called The Winning Team.
I remember that, yeah.
About Grover Cleveland Alexander.
Yeah.
Now, that kind of whitewashed his problems that he had.
Yes.
But Alexander was one of the best pitchers in Major League history for the Phillies. But then was traded to the Cubs and then eventually the Cardinals. But when he went to war, it had a great impact on his life.
Yes, he never got over the experience of the war, which is of course a trench warfare and he ended up with a drinking problem and all kinds of negative things.
You quoted a biographer of Alexander in the book saying that, he's an epileptic as well,
yeah,
that Alexander drank to hide his epilepsy.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And remember, this is 1917, 1918. 1918 especially, what was known as the Spanish flu. What impact did that have on, first of all, the military, but then the baseball players as well?
Babe Ruth got the Spanish flu, and he recovered, but it did affect, as the season wore on, there were fewer and fewer fans coming to the Major League games because they were either ill or they feared contagion.
Did it have an impact on the Bethlehem Steel League? Or the
Hard to know because there's no way to gauge who came in previous years, but I'm sure it did.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned six teams in the Bethlehem Steel League, Shipyard League as well on the East Coast, but there were other teams, industrial teams,
yeah,
and shipyard teams in the country, right?
Yes, there were industrial leagues all over the place, and they existed before the war, remember, baseball was the sport. Every town, every church, every union, everybody had a baseball team.
Mm. So do you have an idea of how many baseball players played in these industrial and shipyard leagues to avoid going to, I guess there's really no way to know whether that was what inspired them to do it, but major league players who played in these leagues.
I would say in the two leagues, probably between 50 and 60 major leaguers, plus a lot of minor leaguers, too, that did the same thing.
Yeah, you talked about a lot of the guys that got maybe one at bat in the major leagues who you know, when they were with steelworkers, they were pretty good players.
Yes,
What about you mentioned? I've been focused a lot on the Lebanon team and the Steelton team because they're right here in our area. The Lebanon team seemed to be pretty good.
Yeah, they won the championship in 1917, the first year of the. But of course, they didn't. There were no major leaguers then. But in 1918, Steelton had the best team.
Mm. Who were some of the players that would be recognized?
Joe McCarthy, who on to be the manager of the Hall of Fame manager of the Yankees, and a bunch of lesser stars, but certified major leaguers.
You know, something I found interesting was the Chicago White Sox in 1919. They would become infamous for throwing the World Series. But some of the players who were on the White Sox, including Seedless Joe Jackson, but some of the other players that we recognize their name from that scandal played in the Bethlehem Steel League.
Yes. Two of Jackson's teammates at the White Sox went to play with him at the Harlan team. And it became known that if... he got blamed for everything. Joe Jackson got blamed for everything. So if a major leaguer went to one of these teams, it was said he went the Joe Jackson route.
Mm. You know, one of the things I find interesting, though, is that even though some of the workers at the plants or the shipyards weren't real happy with these players because they weren't doing a lot of work otherwise... The fans, after the war, I mean, it didn't hurt Babe Ruth's popularity at all.
No, not at all. No, no one knew that the war was going to end in 1918. In fact, the Major League had canceled the season in 1919. But then when the war was over, they reinstated the season and they welcomed back everyone. There was no problem with the so-called slackers or anything like that.
The name of the book is Work, Fight, or Play Ball, Have Bethlehem Steel, Help Baseball Stars Avoid World War I, by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author William Eckenbarger. Bill, thanks you very much for being with us today.
Enjoyed it very much, Scott. Thank you.